Stop laughing. This is erotic.
I'm on a new medication and I think it's making me hallucinate.
I would have been a Ted Bundy victim.
Yeah. I had no idea that so many people out there felt the same way I did. Now I want a pina colada.
An acquired taste.
Hello, this is an Acquired Taste podcast. I'm Kathleen, your green smoothie perfecting, trying my hand at eating more plant-based things again. Mascara makes me feel ready for my day, friend.
And I'm Bethany, your dehydrated, air conditioning, cleaning, watching hours and hours of Miss Marple, friend.
And every week, Bethany and I meet up to discuss our lives, what's weird in the world, and we invite you to join us. This week, we're talking about
the silent twins. Have you ever heard of the silent twins?
Is that like a euphemism for my boobies?
Yes, now it is. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They don't make much noise, but boy, are they a present.
They are.
No, June and Jennifer Gibbons, they were these girls who lived from the 60s to the 90s, and they had this crazy connection as identical twins, and they came to be known as the silent twins because of the way that they communicated or didn't communicate with the outside world. And I will be telling you about them.
Ooh, and this week I'm talking about emotional eating during quarantine, specifically my journey with emotional eating during quarantine. And I just want to get real about some of the things that are happening right now with just eating when you're stressed and eating when you're happy and eating when you're scared. And I'm going through all of it right now, and I know that I'm not alone.
You are absolutely not alone. I've been talking to my therapist about this a lot lately.
Yeah, I haven't been doing video therapy for whatever reason, and I think I need to get in touch with my therapist so I can start talking about my feelings.
Yeah, it's very useful. Every week, like a couple days before my therapy appointment, I think I don't really need to talk to her this week. And then about one day before the appointment, something happens that I realize I definitely need to talk to her. And it's been one of the things keeping me literally sane during quarantine.
The last time I went to go see my therapist was right when quarantine had started, and it was sort of like on the fence whether or not you could do things like therapy in person. So I went, and I didn't have much to talk to her about. I was in a pretty good headspace. Just wait, just wait until she hears from me again. Like, so much shit. Like, I got corona. Then my dad died.
Oh my gosh,
and then like, oh my God.
Corona hit you hard.
It really did.
And a lot has been happening. I think anytime you think to yourself, I don't need therapy anymore, fate says hold my beer and something else. You should never say, I think I'm good now.
You know, it's like that Reddit page, hold my Cosmo, while people do really stupid, crazy shit. Hold my Cosmo while I jump off this roof.
I think therapy is good. Everyone listening knows we think therapy is good, especially right now when we're all stuck. And a lot of people are stuck with things that are not good for them to be around, like a lot of food.
Yeah.
So there you have it. Kathleen.
Yeah.
I texted you about this earlier today and you didn't respond. And I took that as a sign that it was a sensitive subject.
Oh, no. You know why I'm not responding? Because you know that game that we both love to play on our phones, Best Fiends?
Yeah.
Well, I ran out of life. And so I set the clock on my phone ahead. And now my text messages are coming in all wonky. And I...
By the way, this is not an ad.
This is not an ad.
Well, I texted you because I got an alert on my phone today that J. Crew has filed for bankruptcy.
Oh, yes. I saw that.
I know that that is your home. I know you live there. I once sent you a picture of J. Crew as I passed it, and you said, welcome to my home. How are you doing?
Yeah. The news broke last week, or rumors of the news broke last week, and I think just today it became official. You know, I'm kind of sad. I know that this means that they're going to shut down a lot of the stores. I don't know if it means they're going to shut down all of the stores, but I have been flagging things online that once they go on sale, I'm definitely going to buy them.
I mean, J. Crew really is your overall aesthetic.
Yeah, I just...
You love a horizontal stripe.
Yeah, I love preppy basics.
Yep, and then a statement necklace. Anytime I go to J. Crew, I go to the statement necklace, the glass box, where they have their featured statement necklaces, like on a sheet of burlap, pinned very nicely with a straight pin, and I always think about you.
Thank you. Oh, Bethany, that really makes me feel so warm inside my heart. You know, more than anything, I'm really worried about Madewell, because Madewell is a brand of J. Crew, and that's really where I do a lot of my shopping now, even more so than J. Crew in the past year or so. And I'm kind of sad.
Let's each say what large corporations were really concerned about right now in the age of Corona. Yeah. So you're concerned about Madewell and the whole J. Crew family. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I'm really concerned about Target, you know, like I'm worried Target's just not going to pull through in the way that I need Target to pull through.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm going to lose sleep over.
Yeah. Yeah. Target. Yeah. I was really mad at them a few weeks ago and I placed a large toilet paper order online and then they waited like 14 days before saying, sorry, we had to cancel this. We're out of toilet paper. It's like, fuck you, Target.
And it's upsetting, but really Target is having a hard time and we shouldn't get mad at them for not shipping this stuff. We should know that it's because they're hurting. And so they're lashing out by not sending the toilet paper.
What things have you purchased recently? Because I went on a spending spree last week after I had a really shitty day.
I have found myself shopping more. I'm doing a lot of eBay shopping. Dennis and I watched the movie The Ninth Gate over the weekend, which came out, I think, in 99. Johnny Depp plays a rare books dealer, and he is sent on a mission to find the other two copies of this book that are purported to have been written by Satan himself. And it's a very cheesy but awesome film. But only after we watched it did I realize that it was directed by Roman Polanski. So now it's all sorts of also like a problem.
Yeah.
But as a result of that movie, I bought a satchel, like a messenger bag on eBay because Johnny Depp's character walks around in a long worker's coat with his satchel and smokes cigarettes and is just like this floopy floppy style of European traveler that I really, really love. Yep. It was huge in the 90s. So I bought a satchel on eBay. What about you?
I bought herb pots for my windows so I can grow mint in my window over the summer.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and basil. So I guess like that's kind of an okay purchase.
Yeah.
I also purchased a pair of pants from Beta Brand.
Yes.
Also not an ad. They advertised with us. I got a pair of boot cut jeans, Bethany. I can't wait to show you.
We love a boot cut.
I know, we do.
I love a boot cut.
And I've been buying all sorts of salt sprays for my hair for beach waves.
Oh, so what's the difference from one salt spray to the next?
Well, that's the thing. I'm trying to get to the bottom of it. Okay. So I've been spending my hard-earned money on all different types of salt spray hair products. Speaking of which, before we started this podcast, I told you that your hair looks amazeballs today.
Thank you. You just used the term amazeballs, which I haven't heard in years. So well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks.
I washed it and then I let it air dry and this is what happened. And it just has like the sort of natural curl to it that sometimes behaves and sometimes doesn't. So it's really the luck of the draw.
Well, that's why I'm looking into salt sprays because everybody's been air drying their hair lately and a salt spray can really bring your air dried hair to the next level.
So if you're not a salt spray user and you're wondering what the hell it is, it's literally a bottle of a hair product that you spray on and it contains a certain amount of salt. So it does to your hair what swimming in the ocean does to your hair, which is it gets it kind of gritty and a little bit frizzy, but a little bit of body too.
Yeah, it gives you like texture. Like you imagine like a surfer girl with not necessarily curly, curly hair, but she's just got that like very loosey-goosey wave.
Yeah, like if you want to look like a Victoria's Secret model, you like barrel roll your hair into long curl tendrils and then you throw in some sea salt spray and you tousle it. And there you go. Then you're all set.
Oh, can I tell you about this amazing movie I watched this weekend? It's the new Pixar movie, Onward. Have you heard of it?
Wait, is that the one with the trolls and the...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I have not seen it.
Stop what you're doing. Watch it this weekend or this week or whenever you have a second. If you have to pay to rent it, like I use my best friend's Disney Plus, so I didn't have to pay for it. But I'm telling you, if it's like $5.99 on your cable package provider or on your Amazon Fire Stick or whatever, pay for it. It is so amazing.
What's it about? I just know that it's mythical creatures.
It's about a boy who turns 16, and on his 16th birthday, he and his brother go on this magical journey to bring back their dad, who has died a few years earlier, and it's just so heartfelt. The ending is really sad, but like sad in a good way, happy tears. Neil and I finished the movie last night and he said, you know, more than other Pixar movies, I really think this one was for adults. Like the message was really so powerful. So I can't say enough nice things about Onward.
Oh, that's great.
Also, by the way, Bethany, I wanted to talk to you about something.
Okay.
Did you see that your girl Brittany burned down her home gym?
I did. I did. Wait, I think we need to play the audio of this Because
we most certainly do.
I'm going to pull it up because so Britney Spears burned down her home gym because I think in her words, one thing led to another. And
yes, she was so casual about it on Instagram. And I was like, girl.
Yeah. Sometimes you burn down your home gym. Okay, here she is.
Hi, guys. I'm in my gym right now. I haven't been in here for like 6 months because I burnt my gym down, unfortunately. I had two candles and yeah, one thing led to another and I burned it down. So I'm in here and I only have two pieces of equipment left. And I'm going to show you guys what I do during this time.
And then she lifts weights in fast motion. But I do like that she added the unfortunately I burned my gym down because
yeah.
We have to reiterate it is a bad thing when you burn down your multi-million dollar gym.
I mean, she just I lit two candles and you know, one thing led to the next and I think you can see fire damage in the mirror behind her. I've watched this video multiple times and I'm like trying to zoom in. I've taken screenshots. I'm like, is that a black TV screen or is that fire damage?
I just want to reiterate, if people are confused, I think the one thing that led to the other is that one candle fell and led to the next candle falling, which led to the gym burning down.
Brittany.
I like that you're the investigator of this podcast because I never would have thought to look for evidence of the fire damage, but I don't know. It seems to be better. The floor is rubber. So one thing my sister wondered when this news broke was like, how awful did it smell if she burned down her rubber floor?
Yeah. Oh,
poor Brit. Again, along with like J. Crew, Madewell, Target, Brittany is also just a, really a victim of this whole situation, you know? And I think that we should all pray for them and maybe, I don't know, donate any extra money you have to the people who don't need it, like Target and Madewell and Brittany.
Yeah, but you know, the one thing about Brittany that's keeping my hopes high is that she's stronger than yesterday. No, I didn't sing that right. No, I didn't. I didn't sing that. Stronger than yesterday. No.
Nailed it. No, you nailed it. You had it.
And I'm stronger than.
Keep going. You Bethany, got this.
Will you just do it for me? Will you just do it?
Yeah. Hold on. I'm going to sing it perfectly for you.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Here, I'm just. Let me warm up my vocals. Ready? So
you sound just like her.
Thank you.
Let's talk about emotional eating for a second, because this is really getting to me.
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
I have been emotional eating during quarantine like crazy and emotional wine drinking.
Yep.
Case in point, I ordered 24 bottles of the same bottle of wine to be delivered to my house and they came this weekend. I've already gone through two of them. So,
yeah.
I've been using emotional eating as a way to suppress some of my negative emotions, my stress, my anger, my fear, my boredom, my sadness, my loneliness during quarantine. And it's really taking a toll on how I'm feeling about myself. And I know we don't like to talk about weight as a form of self-worth, but just all of the absolute garbage as a result of emotional eating that I've been putting into my body during quarantine is really it's starting to get to me. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go online and I'm going to do some reading about this because I need to find a way to make it through quarantine without – and I, my first instinct is to say without gaining – 20 pounds.
Sure.
But really what I want to deal with during this quarantine is find a way to deal with my emotions other than reaching for a handful of peanut M&Ms.
Like
getting to the bottom of why I'm feeling and what I'm feeling at that time. So I think about some of the things that are stressing people out right now. Like Bethany, what's stressing you out?
Money.
Yeah.
Worrying about the health of the people around me. A family member is going through something right now. I'm very worried about them. I'm worried about my career. I'm worried about just, I think feeling like I'm not being as productive as maybe I should be in this time.
Yeah.
The good old comparing yourself to other people, all of that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, financial status, worrying about loved ones, the lack of going outdoors, the loss of a routine, people worrying about their children, people worrying about their parents, not knowing what's going to happen in the future. So for me, like really grieving a loss of freedom, that is getting to me, not being able to just hop in my car and go wherever I want. I am also really stressed about not getting enough cleaning products when I run out. It sounds so stupid. Like, it's the year 2020, but that is something that's really getting me down. And I found myself using food as a distraction from all of these things.
The cleaning products thing makes sense. I was reading an article, like an op-ed that somebody wrote, and they were saying they're a cleaning supplies hoarder because for them, it's the only thing they have that they feel like they can control. If they have all of the cleaning supplies they need and they know they have plenty of it, they feel like they have some semblance of a hold on this thing. And that feels very accurate.
Yeah. And also, my access to fresh foods has been replaced by non-perishable and frozen items. You know, like you go to the grocery store once every 2 weeks. That's what I've been trying, or once every 3 weeks to just try and avoid crowds. And so I'm buying more things that sit on shelves as opposed to things that sit in produce sections.
Yeah.
Like, have you found yourself doing this too, Bethany?
Yeah, I'm trying to get fresh stuff, but I'm eating far less of it than I used to, for sure. I think I probably eat one fresh product a day versus a couple or three, four. And that also affects your whole body. Even if you're not someone who loves fruit, sometimes you just crave fruit. If all you've been eating is really salty stuff or stuff that comes from a can, your body just craves the thing that it can't have.
The New York Times put out a really interesting article last month. They were saying that Campbell's Soup Company, which has seen a steady decline in sales over the last 2 years, is now ramping up production and temporarily increasing wages for hourly employees to meet the higher demand. In the last month alone, Campbell's Soup has soared 59% in sales from a year earlier. And they're not the only ones. Prego Pasta, Kraft Heinz Company, they're the makers of Kraft Natural Cheeses and Oscar Mayer meats and products and stuff. They are all seeing major increases in their sales.
Sure. It's not just like the doomsday preppers who are buying cans and cans and cans of chicken noodle soup now.
Yeah. And also one of the things that's really been getting me down that's been affecting my eating habits during quarantine is all of these freaking fat phobic memes that I'm seeing on Instagram. Have you seen any of those?
You know what? I haven't, because I have blocked so many of those accounts. I don't see that stuff anymore.
Yeah.
But I am sure it's out there. What have you been seeing?
Well, I have a family member who doesn't know my history of disordered eating, who's been sending me this stuff pretty regularly. And I don't know how to tell them to not send it to me without insulting them, which sounds insane. But I've seen things like, I need to socially distance myself from my kitchen, right? Or gaining weight in college was the freshman 15. This time it'll be the quarantine 15. Or there's one really sad one that just, it makes me feel really bad about myself. Isolation day one. And it's like this woman bending into her fridge and she has the most amazing legs I've ever seen. And then it's isolation day 30. And it's like bigger legs, you know, full of cellulite, which is a totally normal thing for humans to have. It's just not commercially acceptable.
Yeah.
I'm really surprised, Bethany, that you haven't seen these things when you go online.
I don't. When I really made the decision that I was sick of feeling so awful about myself, I went through, and anytime I saw an Instagram post or account that showed me that stuff, whether it was someone that I followed or whether it would show up in the like explore page or discover or whatever that page is called, I would block it. And because I used to subscribe to some of those accounts that would show two incredibly ripped women in bikinis doing push-ups, handstand push-ups against a barn, right?
Yeah.
And it's just like them totally tanned and wearing ponytails and looking super cute, or their bodies being lifted by their jacked boyfriends doing bench presses with their super, super skinny bodies. And like that stuff would just affect me so negatively. And especially now when we are all moving so much less than we used to, I know that for my mental health, I can't see that stuff. And and so I'm also cutting down the amount that I'm on Instagram just in general.
That's probably a smart thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's really hard. And there are so many people who claim that they're workout gurus now and they're posting all of their yoga stuff. And that's great, but it's not going to help me get through this. And so I have to not watch it.
So you've been talking to your therapist about emotional eating lately?
Yeah. I asked her, what do you say? I sort of started grilling her about other clients, like not specifically, but just I kind of am curious about overall trends and how people are doing as sort of a macro scale. And she's noticed a trend among her clients. Like the first couple weeks, people were sort of psyched and kind of thrilled that this was a kind of exciting change and they were working from home and it wasn't this strange and exciting. And then week three, people started getting really sad. Week four, people started getting pretty introspective. And she said that what she often tries to tell her clients is, if you find yourself emotionally eating, ask yourself, what is it that I'm feeling right now that I am using this food to distract me from?
Yeah.
And if you're going to overeat, eat past the point of being full or comfortable.
Yeah.
Enjoy it then. Make sure it's something that you're really psyched about eating and enjoy it so that it at least is paying off in that way. And don't do it while you're watching a movie and you're not thinking about it. Like pay attention to the entire box of Oreos and then eat them and eat them. Psyched about it.
Probably when you're paying attention to that box of Oreos instead of just mindlessly putting them in your mouth while you're watching a movie, you probably will eat less. I mean, for me, when I start to feel stressed, whatever, I go into the kitchen and it has nothing to do with whether or not my body is hungry or not. I need food to fill this void because I eat something and then all these chemicals go to my brain and then I feel good and then I get that like jolt of temporary pleasure. But the key word there is temporary.
Yeah.
Because then I start to hate myself after I think about what I've really done. So I was reading this amazing article from the Washington Post this week, and I will link everything in our show notes. And it was about how self-kindness and self-compassion, you can learn to use it as a tool to curb emotional eating, which I think is so helpful during quarantine. I mean, helpful overall for people who struggle with emotional eating like I do. But I want to talk a little bit about what I learned.
Yes, please. This is so good. You're not doing yourself any favors by beating yourself up for something that's naturally going to happen. We are naturally going to put on weight if we are moving less than normal. Even if you change what you eat, we're just not moving around as much. You cannot beat yourself up for something that is just naturally happening.
This clinical psychotherapist, her name is Anne Safi Biasetti. She writes in this article for the Washington Post that she asks her patients who suffer from emotional eating to acknowledge their distress. She says, I ask my patients to place a hand somewhere on their body that feels safe and comfortable. So for me, that would probably be like my chest, like two hands on my chest or something. And she says to them, take a deep breath and recite some sort of affirmation where you're allowing yourself to recognize that you are feeling the way that you're feeling before you go ahead and just stuff your face. So I'm going to put my hands on my chest. And this is the line she suggests maybe saying to yourself. If you find yourself in the kitchen and you know you're about to binge out of stress.
Yeah.
You say to yourself, out of fairness, this is a moment of suffering and I acknowledge how hard it is.
Wow.
So right now, my kitchen is about 10 feet away from me, but the door is closed because I'm recording, you know, we're recording this podcast, but I'm just picturing myself in my kitchen looking for the family size bag of peanut M&Ms that I've been very swiftly going through or looking for a bag of Cheez-Its to fill my emotional void for whatever reason. And then I picture myself like standing in the kitchen in this emotional state and putting my hands on my chest and letting myself acknowledge that I'm in there, not because I'm hungry, but because I'm emotional. And it feels really empowering.
I love that. I think if I were to do that in a moment of emotional eating, I think I would just start sobbing because it sounds to me like such an acknowledgement that this is a legit problem and you are legitimately hurting, that it's not a bad habit. It's not a weakness. It's not a lack of willpower. It's a symptom of deep pain. And to have it legitimized like that is huge. It also does something that my therapist and my nutritionist, because I too have an eating disorder. We've talked about it before.
Yeah.
They were trying to get me to do for a very long time. And I kept saying no, which is just try to create a tiny little wedge of space between when you feel the emotions you're trying to avoid and when you go in for eating. And that can be 5 seconds. of just stopping for a second to acknowledge what you're feeling and then going in and then doing whatever it is that you need to do to get by in that moment. And it's something that is so revelatory because it makes you really stop and drop into your body and be in the moment, which is something that we're really not great at doing. I'm a worrier. You're a worrier. We're planning. Yeah. We're regretting. We're thinking forward. We're thinking back. And to just feel how you're feeling without judgment is huge. I love that. Yeah.
Right now, I do not feel comfortable in my body. And quarantine has been a huge setback for me. Right before we all became locked down in our homes, like, I was feeling pretty good about my body. I was feeling pretty good about my size, about my eating habits. And then quarantine happened and I'm like, I'm stressed out. I'm just, I deserve this pint of ice cream, right?
Yeah,
like, I'm going through a stressful time. I deserve it. Or today was really hard. I deserve this glass of wine, which turns into two, which turns into three, which turns into more snacking. And I'm feeling so uncomfortable in my size, in my weight, in my clothes not fitting me right now. And for me, at least my experience has been, is that it's an endless cycle. And it's been an all or nothing for me. I'm going to just order pizza and pig out on Saturday night and then Sunday morning, that's my fresh start. And it's like every day at night, I'm like, oh, tomorrow's my fresh start. Tomorrow's my fresh start. Yeah. And reading this article about how it can help for me to acknowledge what I'm feeling before I immediately jump into that pit of binge eating things that I'm not even really physically hungry for is a light bulb going on in the attic of my brain. There was a study about this. So the Appetite Journal, they discussed some research that was done in Britain. 60 British women ages 18 to 50 who suffered from eating disorders completed a questionnaire that asked them about their eating behavior, mental health, tendencies towards self-criticism and self-compassion. And half of the participants that used self-compassion as a way to cope with their negative emotions were more successful in not binge eating, while the other half that used self-critical strategies, they were less successful in curbing their binge eating habits.
Wow.
So Bethany, can you try it out for me? Like, where are you going to place your hands on your body? And what are you going to say to yourself?
Oh, man. I think to me, the safest part of my body. Okay, this sounds weird because to me, the safest place to put my hands is like my hip bones. I feel okay. But that also means I'm standing in like this superwoman position, which seems not in line with self-comfort.
No, you don't have to look at it as self-comfort. That's a position of power and you're giving yourself power. I think that that's totally fine.
But also, I think I'd probably like put them on the back of my neck, just kind of like hold my neck. And what are you supposed to say again?
Well, what clinical psychotherapist Ann Safi Biasetti suggested was you say to yourself, out of fairness, this is a moment of suffering and I acknowledge how hard it is. But you can say to yourself anything. It doesn't have to be that.
I like that, though. I like what she did. By the way, I wish that my parents knew that that was a name option when names were being handed out because she has a way cooler name. Her name is amazing.
So I was also reading about some of the differences between emotional hunger versus physical hunger. And while I probably could off the top of my head give you a definition, sometimes it's good to just go online and reinforce some of the things you already know. It helps to put your eyeballs on words. And I came across this website called mybodytutor.com. And that website suggests distinguishing the difference between emotional hunger and physical hunger, you can use something called the broccoli test.
Oh.
TBT. TBT, okay. The broccoli test.
Okay.
And so ask yourself when you're in the kitchen and you're not sure if it's emotional hunger or physical hunger, ask yourself, would I eat broccoli right now? And if the answer is yes, then you're probably physically hungry. So go ahead and eat, right?
That's
but if the answer
great.
Is no, you're probably emotionally hungry. And so you're not hungry for food. You're hungry for something else like stress relief or a distraction.
Kathleen, this literally happened to me last night because last night dinner was a big pot of noodles, broccoli, peas, and like marinara sauce.
Okay.
Oh, and like Beyond Burger. So like a meat in all of there, right?
Yeah.
And it's just like this big mash. And I had a bowl of it. It was delicious. I went back for seconds and all I ate was the noodles, because I felt like the noodles can fit in my stomach, but the broccoli simply cannot fit in my stomach. And of course the broccoli could fit in my stomach. I just didn't want it to. And
when how it seems funny like
the,
is that?
The bread is so much easier to eat than the broccoli is.
Yeah, the broccoli test.
The broccoli test.
If you don't like broccoli, or if you're really opposed to broccoli, I personally have been obsessed with roasted broccoli lately. I cannot get enough of it. It's like the one thing that I've been buying a lot of during the coronavirus quarantine. But it could be the apple test, right? Yeah. Or it could be the carrot stick test. You can call it whatever you want. But I thought this was revolutionary for me. I was like, whoa!
No, it's so true. It's
the
really
broccoli
good.
Test. Yeah, because when I'm emotional eating, most of the time I want sugar. Like I go into the kitchen to grab candy, or maybe I'm going to grab a handful of chips. And I'm usually not even hungry when I'm grabbing those things. So I'm going to stop myself and be like, hey, would you eat broccoli right now in this moment? And if the answer is no, I'm going to walk out.
Yeah. And I think that it's important to say, I know that if you're listening to this right now and you haven't struggled with emotional eating, it's very easy to go, why are you buying this stuff in the first place? Like you can't eat it if it's not in your house. I don't want to speak for you, Kathleen, but I will say for me, it's two things. One, the same brain that emotionally eats is often present when you're grocery shopping.
Yeah.
And two, if it's not, I oftentimes would think of myself as, well, I'm going to be the kind of person who can just have a bowl of M&Ms sitting out for guests. But like the new me isn't going to need to eat them. And I am like the best version of myself when I'm justifying buying a lot of sugary food. And that never actually happens, but that's kind of what gets that food into my shopping cart.
Yeah.
So try to withhold judgment why someone would have that food in their house, because it's a whole cycle. It's not as easy as just not buying it, not always.
And now when I go to the grocery store, I'm buying these processed quote unquote junk foods that I wouldn't normally buy, because there's a panic about food scarcity.
Yes.
Right? Like, oh my God, like what if the grocery stores close down? Like I have to get this can of Chef Boyardee, which is something that I thoroughly enjoy, but it's not something with a lot of nutritional value. So I try not to keep it in my house. And that's why I've been making kind of bad decisions when I've been going to the grocery store or buying groceries online, because I'm like, oh, I need things that are going to last long, like this family size bag of M&M's.
Like in an emergency, if there is no food and I need to get through something, sugar is a quick energy source. That is absolutely, that makes sense that that's a way that people are thinking.
Yeah. And part of my sort of downward spiral with emotional eating during quarantine also is keeping staples in my fridge that I normally wouldn't keep in my fridge. And I'm going to start really rethinking what the staples are in my pantry and in my fridge so I can make a healthy meal that isn't full of dairy and things that are processed. I know I've said before on this podcast that I want to go more plant-based, and really quarantine put me off of focusing on that. And it's something I need to get back into. But staples that were never staples of mine before that have now become quarantine staples, like 10 different kinds of cheeses and like all of these meats. And I like threw a hissy fit in the supermarket the other day inside my head, not public. I'm not one of those people. when I saw a sign over the chicken that was like 2 per person, I was like, how dare they?
Yeah.
How dare they limit my chicken? So this emotional eating that like now that I'm recognizing it, I think I need to reevaluate what the staples are in my pantry. And I think that's going to help me a little bit. I mean, in the future and hopefully for the rest of quarantine. But man, when I overeat, I don't want to go outside. And then I don't go outside and then I don't get any sunshine. And then I feel shitty. And then I overeat again the next day. And that is what quarantine has been like for me. And I haven't been working out. And it's just it's awful.
It's really brutal. It's so brutal. You are not the only one going through this. I am walking that razor's edge of good days and bad days.
Yeah.
Yesterday was just a straight up bad day. Yesterday, I just ate my way through Sunday. And today is a better day. But I am very hypervigilant about, am I going to fall back into these habits? And I have a lot of times.
Yeah.
And I know. I think one message, you've already said it, I think it's the biggest message of this whole thing, and my therapist told it to me as well. You have to be so compassionate with yourself, because this is a situation that none of us, unless you are a journalist who has been in other parts of the world, none of us have dealt with this before in our entire life. And at the beginning, we weren't sure if this was going to be a situation of food scarcity. So we were stocking up on food in case there was no chance of going outside.
Yeah.
And now we know, okay, we'll probably be able to have access to food. We don't need to panic as much, except we also know that these grocery store workers are putting themselves at so much risk and often not getting paid as much as people who are on unemployment because they're making lower wages. And so we may not have these grocery store workers as readily available. They may decide to step away. So now we're afraid, will food go scarce again? And it's just, there's so much unknown that there is really no space to be criticizing yourself for how you're handling it, because
self-compassion.
We're doing the best we can. This is such a strange situation.
Let's make up our own saying. Bethany, I'm going to put my hands on my chest. You put your hands on your hips.
Yes, put my hands on my hips.
I'm closing my eyes and I'm picturing myself in my kitchen and I just got a shitty text message. I'm really upset about it and I want to reach for the candy, but I'm going to say to myself, you're allowed to feel what you're feeling. You're stressed out and your feelings are hurt. And you're in the kitchen because you're trying to fill a void that isn't hunger. And you're allowed to feel what you feel, acknowledge what you feel, and then make your decision. Because if you still want to eat the M&Ms after that, you do it.
Then eat them. Eat them with joy. I love that. And I'm going to take a cue from you and do the same thing.
Thanks for letting me share, Bethany.
Oh, thank you. Thank goodness I bought my tiny washing machine when I did, because all of the laundromats near me have closed. And so now I can actually wash my clothes, and I've been using True Earth laundry strips, so I'm not lugging around giant containers of laundry detergent.
Bethany and I are obsessed with True Earth laundry strips because they're the new ultra-convenient, zero-waste, pre-measured strip of laundry detergent.
700 million laundry jugs end up in landfills every year. Plastic bottles take thousands and thousands of years to decompose. And True Earth's packaging is small, it's compostable, and it's recyclable, so it helps reduce all of that plastic that's polluting our landfills and our oceans.
And there's no measuring of laundry detergent anymore, and there's no spilled detergent or laundry detergent rings in your cupboards. I literally just had to clean out my mom's washing machine the other day because there was spilled liquid laundry detergent everywhere.
And if you're like me and you don't plan ahead, they have convenient free deliveries so you never run out of detergent again, and there's no testing on animals.
Oh, that's amazing.
I have two cardboard envelopes of laundry strips that just slide onto my shelf, and I can fit about 12 packs of True Earth Eco Strips where I would normally fit one giant jug of laundry detergent.
Plus, True Earth gives back and is matching every purchase and donating to hospitals, food banks, and shelters across the United States and Canada to help those in need.
Nobody loves doing laundry, so why do we keep doing it the same old inconvenient way? Laundry jugs are heavy, they leave messy residue in your cupboards, and they're extremely harmful in our environment. True Earth is the new, better way to do laundry.
Eliminate mess, eliminate wasteful plastic jugs, and win your cupboard space back. Also, True Earth now has free shipping on all orders worldwide.
True Earth Eco Strips are a risk-free purchase, so if you aren't totally satisfied after using them, they will give you your money back. This is a no-brainer.
You can get 10% off of your whole order. All you have to do is go to true.earth and use the promo code TASTE when you check out. Now listen to the spelling. That's www.tru.earth. That's true without the E.
www.true.earth. And if you have any questions, send a message to @TrueEarthMovement on Instagram, and we'll also link you over in our show notes.
Mother's Day is quickly approaching. What are you getting your mom? Here's an idea for you. Give your mom the gift of memories.
Give them Legacy Box. Legacy Box is a super simple mail-in service to have all of your home movies and pictures digitally preserved on a thumb drive, DVD, or they can throw it up in the cloud.
You know, now that I've been cleaning out my parents' house, I've been collecting a whole box of stuff that I cannot wait to send to Legacy Box. VHS tapes and old photos and everything that I'm going to use to remember my dad, you know, RIP.
Yeah, I used it too to send in a bunch of like those mini VHS tapes that we used to use of my grandparents' 50th wedding anniversary, and also some old reel-to-reels of my mom and her siblings growing up holding snakes. That's stuff that we never would have seen again.
We all have boxes of old photos and VHS tapes and such in our attics, and the process is so easy when you trust Legacy Box with your memories. All you have to do is pack it up and send it to them, and their team digitizes everything by hand for you to enjoy.
Plus, I know it's scary to think about sending these priceless memories off in the mail. They keep you up to date with regular email updates through the entire digitizing process. Everything came back to me perfectly preserved, and they send you all your original materials back too.
So for a limited time, Legacy Box is running a 50% off Mother's Day special. Yeah.
Order your Legacy Box today to take advantage of this incredible offer. This is one of the best discounts they've ever offered.
Legacy Box is perfect for you or for someone you love. So all you have to do is go to legacybox.com/taste to save 50% off while supplies last.
Okay, Kathleen, let's switch gears a little bit.
Okay.
Now that we've dealt with our deep-seated emotional issues and how we're trying to be kinder to ourselves, let's distract ourselves a little bit, shall we?
Sounds good. Yeah, shall
okay.
we?
Okay. This is the story of June and Jennifer Gibbons, a.k.a. the Silent Twins.
Okay.
I had never heard this story before. This is less a story of creepiness and more a story of not quite understanding the importance of socializing younger children with people other than their family members.
Okay.
And by the way, my sources for this are the Wikipedia page on June and Jennifer Gibbons, and then Joe Scott on his YouTube channel did a video that was very informative called The Silent Twins, A Journey into Madness. So there are two sisters, June and Jennifer Gibbons. They were born on April 11th in 1963. They were identical twins in Wales. Their parents were Caribbean immigrants Gloria and Aubrey Gibbons. And okay. The Gibbons moved from Barbados to the UK in the early 60s because the dad, Aubrey, was a technician in the Royal Air Force. So they moved around. Both girls had a speech impediment, so it took them a long time to actually start speaking. And when they did, like a lot of twins, they really only spoke to each other, and they seem to have invented their own language. And this is pretty common among twins. You know, they talk about, like, twins can sort of understand what each other is saying. No one else can.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually, two of my very best friends are identical twins, and they are always in sync with one another.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm very jealous of twins, especially identical twins. I just think it's so cool. It later turned out that these girls were speaking a Baja Creole dialect of English, but they were just speaking it really quickly, so people couldn't really understand them. To your point, Kathleen, they coordinated their movements. They were often incredibly mm-hmm. in sync with each other. Mm-hmm. But school was really rough for these girls. They were the only Black children in their community. So, you know, things weren't great. They were ostracized. They were picked on. They were bullied. And it was so traumatic. And eventually the administrators at their school would let them leave school early every day so that they might avoid running into other school kids and being bullied.
Oh, that is awful.
Isn't that
How
horrible?
Awful.
Yeah. I would say maybe, I don't know, come down on the bullies instead of, I mean, it's nice that they like tried to let the girls leave early, but I would rather them get to stay in school and have the bullies have to leave early, but whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it speaks to the time period, you know, that they were going to school in. Yeah.
Yeah. So their language became harder to understand at this point, and it's used as an example of cryptophagia, which, Kathleen, is what you were talking about. It's a phenomenon of that shared language between twins that really only twins can understand.
Cryptophagia. I've never heard that.
Cryptophagia.
Interesting.
Yeah. So eventually the twins became so withdrawn that they really only talked to each other and their sister Rose. That's it. Let's fast forward to when they were teenagers. Their school decided, let's try to socialize them a little bit more with other people. So they put them in separate classes. They wanted to let them build their own identities.
Yeah.
And growing up, I went to school with identical twins, and they did the same thing. They put them in different fourth grade classes and different fifth grade classes.
Yeah.
And I had a crush on both of them, but more Michael. Shout out to Michael and Matthew. To this day, I get the names Michael and Matthew confused. And if your name is Michael or Matthew, I don't know which one it is until I list both in my head. And then I'm like, you're a Michael, not a Matthew.
Well, imagine being that mom with identical twins, like Michael, Matthew, Michael, Matthew.
Like, and Michael and Matthew are like the same name. They're basically the same name.
It's like when my mom called me Bert and my brother Kathleen. Yeah.
By the way, if your name is Matthew, it's also Michael. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
At first, it seemed like a good idea to separate them because both girls claimed that they wanted to become independent. But once they got separated, they would find June completely catatonic in her room. She wasn't getting dressed. She was crying so hard that the floor was wet from her tears. Like, she just wasn't doing well. So the girls were put back together, and for a few years, they were up in their room. They were super creative. So they started writing. And among other things, these women are known for their writing. They wrote and produced plays with their dolls. Sometimes they would record these on tapes and give them to their sister Rose. They kept tons of diaries. They wrote stories. And they even pooled their money and self-published June's novel, The Pepsi Cola Addict, which was about a high schooler who was seduced by a teacher and then sent away to a reformatory where a gay guard made a play for him. So it's a real uplifting book.
Heartwarming story for the family.
Yeah. Jennifer also wrote a book called The Pugilist, where a physician really wants to save his child's life, so he kills the family dog and uses the dog's heart for a transplant. And then the dog's spirit lives on in the child, and then the child ultimately has revenge against the father. Another very uplifting story.
But so they weren't emotionally incapacitated. Mm-hmm. They just didn't do well apart from one another.
Yeah, they were fine, except they had, I think, what we would call now like a severe codependence on each other.
Yeah, yeah.
The other issue is that the longer they spent together, the more they grew to hate each other. So they would write in their journals about how they wanted to kill each other, all of this stuff.
Oh my God.
But past attempts to separate them had also not gone well. So it's tough. Fast forward now to they're 18 years old. They had developed crushes on these two American boys. And true to Americans, they were troublemakers. So these boys had histories of robbery and arson, but this is dangerous when this happens. The boys were troubled, but the boys paid attention to the girls. And so often that's how someone can get roped into a bad situation, because you feel seen for the first time. So they had this crazy whirlwind summer. They were all hanging out, but also the tension between the two girls also ramped up at this time. June did what a sister does. She tried to choke her other sister with a radio wire.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that's what sisters do. Yeah.
Jennifer tried to drown June in a river, as sisters do.
Girls being girls.
Girls being girls. And then things really went downhill because the boys announced they were going back to America. And this is when the girls' behavior got worse. They started committing arson. One of the things they burned down was a tractor factory, also known as a tractory. And when police arrested them, police had all of the evidence they needed, because not only was there a burned down tractor factory, but both of the girls had kept diaries where they had noted their crimes in their diaries.
Don't write it down. Like, that's step number one they teach you in how to be a criminal, 101. Do not write it down. Keep it in your head.
Yeah. And step two, if you're going to write it down in a code. Use a code.
Yes. Encrypt your diary.
Yeah. Today I beed down a TF. Instead of I burned down tract factory. Okay, these girls were sentenced to Broadmoor Psychiatric Hospital. They were 19 years old at this time. They would end up staying at Broadmoor for 11 years. And the problem is that they couldn't be in the same room together. If they were, they would try to kill each other or they would fight. But if you separated them, they would go into just these depths of mourning. They wouldn't eat. It was so hard. Later on, June said that they were forced to stay there for 11 years because of their, quote, selective muteness. She said, quote, juvenile delinquents get 2 years in prison. We got 12 years of hell because we didn't speak. We lost hope. I wrote a letter to the Queen asking her to get us out, but we were trapped. Eventually, they were diagnosed with schizophrenia, which I don't know if that's an accurate diagnosis. It doesn't seem like it is, but at the time, they were separated and then they were given heavy medication. And after about 2 years, they started speaking. They were eventually even allowed to write to each other. Then they were eventually allowed to see each other.
Wow.
But even after this therapy and the separation, they still weren't happy. They wrote letters to each other saying that as long as one of them was alive, the other wouldn't be happy.
Are you kidding me?
And it's like heightened emotion. As long as one of them was alive, the other one couldn't live, basically.
Can you imagine getting a note from your sister, one of your sisters? Bethany, as long as you're alive, I'll never be truly happy.
I mean, in one way, it would be incredibly insulting. But in the other, if I had been feeling that way, I think I would feel very seen. where it's like, okay, thank God, because if you're alive, I'll never be happy. So I'm glad that it's mutual.
If my cats could write letters, I know one of them would write it to the other.
Yeah, but they cuddle together every once in a while, right?
Yeah,
sort of.
Yeah, out of necessity, yeah. I guess.
So a lot of the reasons that we know all of this stuff is because there was a journalist named Marjorie Wallace. She worked at the Sunday Times. She wrote about them in her book, The Silent Twins. And she talked about their apparent pact that if one of them died, the other must begin to speak and live a normal life.
What?
Basically had to like go on and live the life that both of them could not live together.
So they knew that they were being weird. And I don't even like to use the word weird in that context, but...
Yeah, I think that they came to realize in adulthood that their whole combined history had prevented them from growing and maturing like a quote-unquote normal person would have been able to.
Weird.
Because if you think about it, if you have an identical twin and you two were allowed to become very codependent with each other... Mm-hmm. And then you hit the age of like 16, 17, you want to start dating, you want to start hanging out with other people, but you feel a certain level of like you have to take care of your twin.
Yes.
And you have to make sure that, well, if I go off, they're not going to be okay. And so in a lot of ways, you're holding yourself back.
Yeah.
To make sure that the other person stays okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think after a while, there's just a ton of resentment.
Yes.
And you see all of the things that your peers are doing and going off and having these lives and your siblings. And you're like, I never got to do that because I was making sure that my sister was okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of what I imagine happening.
If I had a sibling that forced me to hold back and do that, I would hate that sibling. I would say, I will never be happy until you're dead.
I mean, there it is. So during their stay in the hospital, during this 11 years, they started to believe that it was actually necessary for one of them to die. This is fascinating to me. So apparently they had a lot of discussions about it. And ultimately, Jennifer agreed to make the sacrifice of her life.
What?
So I don't know what this looked like. I'm so curious what these conversations were like. A, how do you bring it up? B, how do you decide who it's going to be? This is fascinating. So the women were eventually moved to a minimum security prison. So Jennifer remembers the one who said that she was going to take her life for her sister. Jennifer told her parole officer that she knew everything was going to get better because she was going to die soon. The very next day, as the sisters were being transported to their new minimum security prison, Jennifer died with her head in her sister's lap. And doctors said she did not have any drugs or poison in her system. She died of a rare inflammation of the heart, which is not normally fatal. It's like she knew she had to die, and so she just did. It's really a mystery of how this happened. And June, her sister, went on to live a really pretty normal life.
What?
She lived quietly. Yeah, she didn't necessarily want to be talking to a lot of people about her past, and she was pretty private, but she went on to live a long, normal life.
What?
It's such a mystery. It's sad, but it's also oddly... I don't know. It's oddly beautiful in a way that this is a bond that these two people had. No one will ever understand it. And Jennifer ultimately wanted her sister to go on and live a life that neither of them could live together. And I don't know how or why she died, but she died basically the next day.
It's like the opposite of The Notebook, you know, when your spouse dies or your partner dies and you're so heartbroken, you die just like the next day or a few hours after them. This is like the reverse Notebook where you know that the two of you can't exist in the world together. And so you choose to sacrifice yourself and you die of heartbreak.
It's so, so fascinating. So there was a 1986 TV drama called The Silent Twins. There's also an Inside Story documentary that came out in 1994 called Silent Twin Without My Shadow. And then the journalist who wrote the book about them, Marjorie Wallace, a play was written based on that book, and it's called Speechless, and that debuted in London in 2011. So there have been films and plays written about him, but it's very, very interesting. And there's just basically a lot of unknowns that surround these two women. I think a lot of like unknown mental illness at the time and unknown effects of not being allowed to be... I think there was so much trauma that probably wasn't handled.
Yeah.
or couldn't be handled.
Or even reported on, you know, because who knows?
Because keep in mind, I mean, these were two girls who were outcasts anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they didn't look like everybody else.
Yeah.
And so that alone would be enough to cause you a lot of trauma. Add on top of that, having this sister that you are raised to really, I don't know if anyone intervened in them really speaking their own language exclusively and
yeah.
limiting their social lives. And it's a big old mess that it's really hard to kind of pull apart.
Hearing this story without going into all the nitty gritty details, Bethany, like you did, it sounds like when they were little, they believed or they acted like they were one person, like they couldn't be apart from one another. But then as they grew older, they realized that there wasn't enough room in the world for both of them to exist together. And then therefore one of them had to go away. There wasn't any individuality. And so can you imagine waking up tomorrow and there's another Bethany and you're exactly the same. There's no differences between the two of you. Wouldn't you want to kill her?
I think everyone would. I can't imagine two of me. I'm exhausting enough with just one of me. I see the look of distance and like panic in Dennis's eyes when he leaves my apartment after a weekend and he just needs space. Now imagine if there was a second one. It would be awful. Too much.
Listen, Neil says to me, he goes, why would I ever cheat on you? I can barely handle just you.
That's the thing.
I don't need another lover to make me miserable.
And frankly, cheating is just a scheduling nightmare.
It is,
I don't know how you could ever cheat. I can't keep one boyfriend straight.
No.
There's too much scheduling involved.
Logistical nightmare indeed.
Yes. So that is the story of June and Jennifer Gibbons, the silent twins. It is fascinating. And I hope that was a bit of a distraction. And I also hope that if you have twins in your life, they are allowed to be their own people and it is okay, because I think that's really important.
I hope they're not the creepy kind of twins.
The kind that stand at the end of the hallway when you're riding your tricycle through a hotel.
Exactly.
Just trying to mind your own business.
Exactly.
Come play with us.
During quarantine, I've been really focusing on getting enough sleep. And to get really good quality sleep, you have to find the right mattress because every single body is unique.
We have realized we have nothing in common except that we do this podcast and we're friends. But in every other we're very, very different. I am very tall. You're petite. I love to lay in bed all day. You prefer, I don't know, meeting people.
And you know what? That is why we love Helix mattresses, because they're designed for our specific body types and sleep preferences.
So Helix has a sleep quiz. It takes 2 minutes to complete, and they use your answers to match your body type and sleep preferences to the perfect mattress for you.
Yeah.
My body type is long. My sleep preferences is all the time, please.
If you like a mattress that's really soft or really firm, or maybe if you sleep on your side, or if you sleep on your back or your stomach, or maybe you sleep really hot, with Helix, there's a specific mattress for each and everybody's unique tastes.
So some of the qualities that I needed in a mattress that Helix customized for me was that I sleep in one way, my partner sleeps in the other. Like Dennis sleeps on his back, I sleep on my side. And these are all things that my mattress was able to customize for me.
I love my Helix mattress because it feels like I'm getting massaged by an extra large marshmallow.
Plus, Helix was even awarded the number one best overall mattress pick of 2019 and 2020 by GQ and Wired magazine.
They have a 10-year warranty and you get to try out your mattress for 100 nights risk-free. If you don't love your mattress, I mean, you're going to love it, but just in case, they pick it up from you and they give you a refund. It's all super easy.
So go check it out for yourself. Go to helixsleep.com/taste. Take their 2-minute sleep quiz and they'll match you to a mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. And right now, Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders for our listeners. So go to helixsleep.com/taste.
Bethany, I'm so jealous of everybody wearing tie-dye.
What is happening to you? Where did this come from?
Aren't you seeing everyone on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter like wearing these amazing tie-dye sweatsuits?
Yeah, but I just I don't know. It never entered my mind as a thing that I should ever be able to pull off. I can't pull off a tie-dye sweatsuit.
I'm about to buy myself a tie-dye kit because I really am having tie-dye FOMO.
Okay, well,
I'm not one to normally experience FOMO.
Points, you do experience sartorial FOMO. I'll say that. There's never been a trend you did not. not want to jump on.
No, you're right.
But I will say this. I have a lot of respect for you that you want to make your own tie-dye versus purchasing pre-tie-dyed clothing, because I think part of the whole experience is the tie-dyeing process.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to do it in my mom's backyard. I'm going to make matching sweatsuits for her, myself, and my husband.
She's going to love that. They're both going to love that. Now, here's the question. What sort of pattern are you going to do? Because you know you can like twist the item into a circle, add rubber bands. You can also add rubber bands in a long shaft-like pattern. What are you gonna do?
I haven't thought that far ahead, but I know that it's going to be exclusive orange and pink tie-dye. Okay. Those are the two colors I really feel complement each other the best.
Yeah, they pop very, very nicely. And you know, great for the summertime, like a sweatsuit.
These are the things keeping me up at night.
Yeah, no, you know what? I haven't tie-dyed in years. It used to be that every time I went to vacation Bible school, the last day of that week, we would all tie-dye something for the Lord. And you know, it was fun. And I think the Lord appreciated a little tie-dye, a cross with our church name tie-dyed. Like, I think that when Jesus was crucified, the last thing he hoped was, I hope someone takes this implement of torture and puts it on a shirt and tie-dyes it.
Yes. No, I agree fully. I wonder if the Lord would also like some sand art, because I'm about to buy a sand art kit too.
Is that when you take colored sand and you layer it?
Yes, it's like you put it in a glass bottle and you like do all the layers, and then when you're done, you need to seal off the cap. My personal favorite are the glass bottles or the plastic bottles shaped like bears, you know, because it's like then you have like a sand art bear. Yeah.
I really love that you're really going into summer camp art projects.
And then I'm going to buy lanyard. And I'm going to make some friendship bracelets. I'm going to make some keychains. Bethany, you tell me what your favorite colors are. I'll make you a keychain.
What's the name of the plastic string that you use to make all of those friendship bracelets?
Lanyard.
Lanyard? It's called lanyard?
Yeah. Oh. You didn't know that? You don't know the word lanyard?
I thought a lanyard was what you wore keys around your neck on, or like your ID badge to get backstage to see the Backstreet Boys.
Oh, yes. That's also called lanyard, but the plastic string is called lanyard too.
Lanyard.
Yeah, I see where the confusion lies.
See where confusion came from? Yeah. Okay, no, this is exciting. I'm so excited. And here's another question. I have a follow-up question.
Yeah, sure.
When you finish braiding, weaving your lanyard, do you melt it off after you tie it off, or do you tie it off and then just hope it stays?
I tie it off and hope it stays.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you supposed to melt it off? Have you done that in the past?
I don't know. I don't think you're supposed to, but I feel like it would work better because those things always come untied. They're too thick to tie.
I'm also in the mood for some knock hockey.
I don't know what that is.
You don't know what knock...
Spell it.
Did you have a childhood at all?
I don't
knock
even know
hockey.
That word. Just, what did you just say? Spell it.
Knock hockey. Like K-N-O-C-K space hockey. H-O-C-K-E-Y.
Like hockey.
Yeah, like knock hockey. You know those at camp when you're a little kid? They have, it's like a hockey set that just sits on top of a picnic table and it's all made out of wood and you're like playing hockey. It's like table hockey, but it's transportable. It's just wood square with a hockey rink painted on the inside.
So I feel like this is the time when I should tell you that I have actually never gone to camp.
Really?
Yeah.
Never went to camp?
No.
Not even like in the town, like summer camp in your town?
No. I mean, I did vacation Bible school. That was just like a daytime thing because I have like, I struggled with severe homesickness from like first grade through
today,
like last week. So I couldn't go. My sister did. My sister went away to Camp Manit something or other. Camp Manitoba or something. Camp. It started with an M, and we had to drive her there. And then she always came back smelling like death. Because she didn't shower, you know, for 2 weeks or something.
And your clothes are always dirty all sorts of stuff. No, maybe you need to go to adult camp to experience the magic that is camp.
But I feel like adult camp is different because it's just people having sex with each other. Is it not?
No, it kind of is. When I was in band camp in college, we would just all hook up with each other.
Yeah. Mm. There's something very different about going to camp when you're in the single digits, hopefully. And going to camp when you're in high school or college. I think it's more about like friends and crafts when you're younger and more about like friends and making out with those friends when you're older.
I've been reading a lot about people's purchasing habits during quarantine, and it's all about entertainment and books and athleisure wear. People aren't really buying anything that doesn't fit into those three categories.
It's important. We're all changing in size and shape. Athleisure wear is comfy, and we want to read books and we want to watch movies. And, you know, I think it's good to remember that in times of need, we've turned towards art. Please remember, we've turned towards art. Support artists. We've turned towards art.
I was up until 3 a.m. last night watching this new show on Netflix called Hollywood. Have you heard of those?
No. What's it? You're always on the cutting edge of Netflix watching.
It's a new Ryan Murphy show. He co-created it with something else. But Ryan Murphy, you know, he's responsible for Glee and responsible for American Horror Story and stuff like that. It's this show that takes place in the 1940s and 50s. And it's all about old school Hollywood.
Okay.
And it is, the costumes are so beautiful. The actors are beautiful. It's just, the scenes are set perfectly and it's so retro. And the storyline, Bethany, there's so much banging. There's so much banging. And there's so many famous people in it. It's incredible. So Hollywood, I'm telling you, I was up until 3 a.m. My husband found me dead asleep on the couch at 6:30 this morning. He's like,
oh,
hovering over me. He's like, what are you doing? And I was like, ah,
Hollywood.
I'm sorry.
Old school glamour.
Hollywood. Old school glamour. Hollywood. Hollywood.
I've been watching Hammer horror films, which I did not know existed until recently.
It sounds like a porno. Hammer horror?
Yeah, it's like when you bang so hard that someone thinks construction is going on. It's this production house that put out these amazing horror films starting in the late 50s or 60s through, I think, the early 2000s. They had films coming out. So many of them starred Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing. Like together, Peter Cushing was usually Van Helsing and Christopher Lee was usually Dracula. And we watched one that was just called The Skull. And it was about this skull that got people to kill each other. And there's like The Curse of Frankenstein and there's the blood from the mummy's tomb.
Oh, and the satanic rites of Dracula. I know what you're talking about now. But where are you? Are you watching this on Shudder Network? What are you watching it on?
No, I feel like I'm watching them on... I want to say it's on Amazon. Some of them are on Amazon. Some of them you have to rent, but you can get some of them for free.
Cool.
They're really great. And I'm looking up, actually, they started in 1934. And
so like the original Frankenstein is a part of this collection probably,
right? I don't know if they were part of like those classic monster movies, but they definitely, they have a place in that whole canon. But like The Woman in Black starring Harry Potter, that's a Hammer horror film, and that came out in 2012. So,
Hammer horror. I need to look this up. This is a phrase I've never heard of.
Yes. I've been watching all those films. You will fall down a wonderful hole watching these films. And there's so much beautiful gothic horror. If you love interior decor, you love like big gold frames, and you love cushy velvet cushions, you're going to love these movies.
Okay, so yeah, if you look up Hammer horror movies, mm-hmm. lists come up and it explains exactly what it is and who's making them. And this is definitely a horror rabbit hole you could fall down into.
Yeah, there's Twins of Evil. They do some Sherlock Holmes. They do The Hound of the Baskervilles. But there's also like Taste the Blood of Dracula. And
Yum.
The Satanic. Yeah, we have Frankenstein. What's this one? Frankenstein Must Be Destroyed. Vampire
Ooh, I
Circus.
Have an idea for us.
What?
We should write a script, Bethany, and submit it to Hammer Horror Films. And my idea is that it's all going to be about the different types of smoothies that Dracula likes.
What? Okay.
Kidneys and eyeballs and kale.
Yeah. Gotta be a green, like a dynamic green in there.
Toes and plasma and strawberries.
Guts and guts and brains and lentils.
And semen. Bethany, where can people find you on social media?
People can find me at Ms. Bethany Watson on Instagram, at Radio Bethany on Twitter. What about you, Kathleen?
You can find me at Webgirl Kathleen on everything. If you want to follow this podcast, you can find us on Twitter at Acquired Podcast.
On Instagram at Acquired Taste Podcast.
On Facebook, Acquired Taste Podcast. Plus, make sure you check out our fan group. There are some really lovely people in there. And if you're looking to make new friends, that is most certainly the place.
You can also send us an email, an acquiredtastepodcast@gmail.com.
If you want to send us snail mail, our address is Acquired Taste Podcast, P.O. Box 1717, Hoboken, New Jersey, 07030.
You can also leave us a voicemail. We play them at the end of every show, or almost every show. Give us a call. Our phone number is 917-994-0353.
This podcast is edited by Charlotte Gartenberg. You can find her on Twitter at Chargar, that's C-H-A-R-G-A-R, and on Instagram, lit_fuck.
This is your weekly reminder to take a deep breath.
Oh, that felt good. I felt that in my lower back.
Yeah. And Taste Buds, here is what you had to say this week.
Hi, Bethany and Kathleen. This is Kira from Boston, Massachusetts. I was just listening to this week's episode and had to call because I've never felt more seen. You guys were talking about having a good cry, Kathleen in particular, crying in your car, and then having to take a glance in the mirror to look at your ugly cry face. It's something I do often, and I just feel so much less alone now that I know that you guys do it too.
Hey, Kathleen and Bethany. We are in a Zoom chat right now with a bunch of buds, so I'm going to talk, and I don't know what I'm saying because I'm kind of drunk, but so my name is Brienne, and now everyone else is going to say their name. So my name is Brienne, and now Jennifer's going to say hi. Say hi, Jennifer.
Hi, ladies. Jennifer.
All right. Now say hi, Casey.
Hey, ladies.
Say hi, Rose. Oh, I couldn't hear Rose. Oh, no, I couldn't hear Rose. Say it again.
What up?
All right. Say hi, Jesse.
Hey, guys.
Say hi, Tequila.
Hey, girl.
Say hi, Blair.
Hey, what up?
Okay, Jamie, say hi.
Hi.
Say hi, Squirrel.
Hello, friends.
Say hi, Nicole.
Hi, Jamie.
Say hi, Neil. Say hi, Chris.
Hi, ladies. We literally just had an earthquake.
And say hi, Nikki.
Hi, ladies.
Say hi, Katie.
Hi.
And say hi, Mary.
Hi, Bethany.
And we are having so much fun, and we hope that you can hop on one of these soon because we're having so much fun. We love you, and we hope to hear from you soon, and we hope you're feeling better, Kathleen, and everything is all happy. Okay, we're hanging up now. Okay, bye.